Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 184. Lots of live shows coming up. Saturday, March 24th, we're going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. Come out to see that. And then we're popping over to Minneapolis, Minnesota on Friday, the 30th of March. We're going to be at the Varsity, coming back to Varsity. This time I'm bringing Matt and Jonah with me. So come out. We may have special guests, you guys. The Nerdist Industries Podcast Network has launched two new podcasts that you should check out. Why not? You got plenty of time. Cashing In with TJ Miller. It's TJ Miller and Cash Levy. I highly recommend it. TJ came on our podcast a while back. He's hilarious. Super great guy. Cash Levy I've known for years, just from the LA stand-up circuit. And now they're doing a podcast together. Also, The JV Club with host Janet Varney, one of the smartest, funniest people I know. Our first few guests so far have been Christina Hendricks, June Raphael, and Gillian Jacobs. And I know she has some other incredible guests lined up. That's really just about, you know, being a lady and growing up feeling kind of awkward and nervous as we flow into what she refers to as adolescence. So it's a wonderful podcast, and please give it some attention in your ears. And now this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, it's Key and Peele. Maybe you've seen their show on Comedy Central. They're friggin' hilarious and super nice guys. And just talking to them about the process by which they, because I love processes, the process by which they, they write sketches on their show. I mean, they're so thoughtful. And I loved hanging out. The energy in the room was enormous, and I really hope to have these guys on again soon. If you haven't seen Key and Peele on Comedy Central, just got picked up for a second season, and it's a fantastic show, and you should. And maybe this podcast will convince you to do that, so let's just get into it, shall we? Okay, fine. Who am I talking to? It's you, but you're not talking back. You might be, but I can't hear you. I just had a lot of caffeine. And breathe. The Nerdist Podcast number 184 with Key and Peele.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Solid gold. These are songs you recognize.
Watch these artists lip sync. I just remember, like,
if you shut your eyes, it's like, listen to the radio.
Whenever I watch a Time Life collection infomercial, they draw me in for, I like 12 seconds.
Oh,
of
yeah.
Things I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just the sheer amount of lip syncing that's going on when they're
performing. Oh, it's crazy. You'd rather watch Midnight Special, which was like 10 years prior to that. You know what I mean? And where they were actually
performing. Midnight Special infomercial is also excellent. Well,
that's an excellent infomercial. That may be the best infomercial on television.
That was funny. That was in a period of time where there, like, television was very much like everything has to look perfect, so it's okay to lip sync because as long as it looks
perfect,
good,
right.
And now we become such a culture of like, no, we like things that are.
We want to see the everything behind the curtain.
We want to see the fuck ups. We want to see all the organic.
I was watching the Loving Spoonful play Summer in the City
I think it's Lovin' Spoonful.
Lovin' Spoonful. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure it's
I don't mean to replace your G with an apostrophe.
Sorry. There's that Summer in the City, there's that part where the vocals kick out and then you hear the sounds of the city.
Of the city, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they just stopped playing and shrugged their shoulders because it was clearly the backing track.
Hot town. Oh, no, not yet, not yet.
Oh, that's so funny.
They should have just had Michael Winslow come out and do the sounds of traffic.
Yes.
In the middle of the song.
This is a 78 Pinto.
Key and Peele are on the podcast today.
Yay!
Key and Peele, who are working on their second season of Key and Peele.
We're writing
while
it.
Finishing the first
We're writing right now. Hold on, Chris, 1 second. I just got to finish this line of dialogue period there.
Put up here what you think here.
And I'm just going to have Jordan pre-check that for me.
Listen, okay. I've had many friends, and I've done many pilots for them, too. It is a feat to be able to get past one season on Comedy Central. Like, that is...
Oh, it is. It's a bit of a... It's a hurdle.
That was the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Second season.
That's what everybody keeps saying. Yeah, but that's what our manager keeps saying. Goes, look, guys, seriously, if you could just get the show... It's going to make such a difference in your career. Look, guys, if we could just get the show picked up, it's going to make such a difference in your career. If you could just get first season.
When does the difference happen?
Yeah. Right,
when
exactly.
Is that part?
Season 5, syndication,
when will I
fellas.
Be rich?
When do we get to be rich?
I want to wipe my ass with hundreds.
Chris, I have not seen this week's episode of Walking Dead yet.
No.
RPA is running around. Zach has been crazy this week.
No, I haven't seen it.
He has come up to me 6 times in the last day, and he's like, have you seen it yet?
He's
when would I have seen it, Zach? Shouldn't you be on a run?
Shouldn't I be doing something?
Oh, yeah, I got to go pick up towels from my DVR. I mean store. It's the show is getting fucking... it's amazing.
It's yeah.
Well, Jonah's on his way.
Better be.
Jonah's on his way.
I don't know how it seemed like, and I was one of the guys that stopped watching in the middle of second season when nothing was happening.
Yeah.
I was like, how can you fuck up zombies?
Yeah, right.
But now people are saying it's back.
You know, there were a couple episodes that were just more people heavy and not a lot of zombie drama. But if you hung in there, it totally fucking paid off.
Oh yeah. And then he said this last week's episode. I decided I'm not gonna give up. and our EPs were all like, I'm not gonna give up. But if they don't get out of that house at some point in time, I'm gonna set something on fire. And then
mainly the house.
But now is it Gazzara? Who's the
Glenn
new
EP? Mazzara.
Jeff, what did he do before?
The Shield.
Oh, the fucking Shield. Yeah. That's what it is. I was like, why is it getting so better so fast already? I mean, it got real stationary for a minute.
Can I cut to this season and just start watching this season?
You have to watch the last episode of last season.
I gotta sit through looking for the little girl in the woods.
You really need to watch.
You have to watch the last two episodes.
No spoilers, not saying anything, but you need to you need to pick up where you left off. I promise it will pay off.
Yes.
All right. We'll
I promise it'll pay off. What was it? You noticed the Rick Dees thing.
Oh.
Hey, Nick.
Nick.
Nick. Hey, Nick.
Nick.
Nick's in headphone there.
We're talking about Rick Dees.
Oh, hey.
In true Rick Dees fashion.
He worked for Rick Dees for years.
18 years.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
I was looking at this quote that says, don't make the same mistakes I did, Rick Dees, and I want to know what that meant.
Well, it's really for that keyboard over there, the 360. It's just a computerized, remember the old cart machines where you play drops?
Yeah,
so that was really like the first keyboard thing where you could just put like 50 sound bites on there and play like little zipper sound effects or whatever. And
or dogs howling.
Right.
Say what?
So he didn't jump on the bandwagon for that right away. And
immediately bought the first one.
No, he didn't get he didn't buy the first one, which he should have. He was still using. I know Rick since 86, and we were still using carts up until 2004.
What? Cart machines in 2004?
I was still like changing pads. And for anybody,
they're like 8-track.
They're like 8-tracks, but they just have one little item on there, like a song or a jingle or a sound effect. And he still was using an old RCA rotary board. Now, if anybody doesn't know this, most soundboards in radio are slider. You see those slider
pods.
The old dials.
The old dials. And they were... He had this, the guts of it was all new, but it was the facade that was still from 1962.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, no, I used to do a show on Animal Planet, and my producer used to produce Solid Gold.
Oh, okay.
So I have a
yeah.
little thing about yeah.
Hey, let me tell you, that was a great show.
That's so funny.
Whoa. So what were the mistakes?
The mistake was
technology.
Oh, just that he didn't, you know.
Oh, yeah.
His whole thing was, I'm carbon-based, and so I'm not into the whole computer thing.
Oh,
you know?
Right.
It took him forever to get into any
I like being anti-computer because they're not organic.
Well,
like,
exactly right. That's what he would use. He would use that phrase. They're not organic enough. I mean, you know, blade and tape. And I was using, for him, a blade and tape for years until they finally said, look, we're going over to...
I mean, I started working at K-Rock in 1995, mm-hmm. and we would still make fun of blade and tape. Like,
blade
you would see old razor blades, like, lying
sitting around
the studio.
Yeah.
And they're like, look at these fucking things. Like, that was 95.
Yeah, blade and tape was, I mean, we used to do the grease pencils and all that, and my fingers would get all these calluses, because you would be constantly cutting them, you know, as you're doing the razor blade, and you just kept going until your fingers would toughen up after a while.
Sure.
Oh, that's so wild.
Finger trauma from
finger
Rick
trauma.
D's. The Rick D's years.
Days, man.
Oh, well, thank you, Nick.
Thank you,
sir. I appreciate that.
You know, in those days, real quickly, when we used to edit voice tracks, I got to the point where on reel to reel, I would just edit backwards, because I know that the first thing that I would hear is the right take.
Oh,
so
right.
You
okay.
would just do it that way. Oh. And I got very quickly on that. And then when we had to go to digital, you couldn't do that. You had to go, oh, geez, I got to go to the end of it and then find whatever the right thing
is. So analog was more efficient.
It was more efficient.
It was actually, I was pretty fast on those things.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, maybe someday
we'll... Come in on our show. But only if you do analog.
only analog. That's right. Ampex.
Key and Peele the morning.
Oh, my God. Hey,
yes.
That's our favorite.
You know, we do these, we'll do like the tour of like five... shock jock sounding morning announcement. And it's always, they'll have names like, we are Dweezil in the Cliff.
Yeah, right. In the Cliff. This is Geezer in the Douche.
Ours were Johnny Z and the Dickhead.
Johnny Z.
But the two guys,
right for it.
The two guys would always argue, like, you never knew who was who. They would always argue over who got to be Dickhead.
Like, I want to be Dickhead.
There's so much less pressure. I just get to be Dickhead. I get to fart and then I leave.
Right. My favorite thing, Chris, is that they'll be like, so you guys are doing, some racial comedy. What's going on with that? And you'd be like, yeah, well, we want to, it's trying to take it to the next level. And you say response, and then they won't respond to you. They'll just go, Key and Peele here. We're talking to Key.
Yeah, I'm talking to Key. Yeah. There's no response.
Why is this conversation ending after
because
everything we said?
Because they don't listen.
They don't like the listening.
When you do, Jonah Ray. Freshly back from South by Southwest. Right on.
All right.
Hey, Jonah Ray.
All right, let's talk about politics.
There we go. But the thing with morning radio DJs is I did morning radio for a while, and what happens is you die inside because you're so tired.
Oh, yeah.
You get up at 3:30
in the morning,
and you can't hear anything because your brain is gone.
It's not working right. Yeah, exactly.
Jonah, kneeling on the floor. How was South By?
I was drunk.
Yeah. It was drunk.
I was there for about a day. I drank for 2 weeks. I don't know.
I don't even know.
I drank myself into a time hole.
And you just got back via wormhole?
Yeah, exactly. I just got shot out right to my desk at work. I was like, this isn't good.
You had a great show tomorrow. That's messing with time.
Your stubble is less than it was yesterday.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
So, Key and Peele, you guys do this racial comedy thing.
You guys do the racial, the black, white stuff. Show us the funny.
The black white.
You guys are the black white stuff. Key and Peele here.
The black whites.
We're just talking like the morning radio stuff. Jordan was just saying like they'll make a comment and then not answer. Like we'll respond to what they said and then they don't answer. They just go. Key and Peele.
And you're just like, you're not interested in anything I have to say. I'm just filling in time for you.
That's all I'm doing. Opening up huge conversations, huge debates. And Key and Peele here. These guys are funny.
do some of that racial comedy, you guys.
You guys, okay, no, Jordan, it's Peele, right? Never first names. Peele, you do the Obama. Why don't we break out a little bit of that?
Show us some of the funny.
Show us the funny. Well, I'd love to, but it's a different kind of medium.
All right, smart stuff from Key and Peele. Is that Key or is that Peele?
No. people are watching this with their ears.
Yeah, right.
No. our audience is synesthetic. And, like, they're get super, like...
Synesthetic, yeah.
We're going to pan you guys to the right and left.
Lightning and Grundle here.
We are. Lightning and Grundle.
Grundle from Beowulf?
Yes, yeah. Here's a radio station.
I'm doing a radio show!
We'll be doing this block. Next up is Anonymous. He'll be
I'm a hellspawn.
You guys both, you were both on Mad.
Yes.
Yeah, same time. Mm-hmm.
At which, Mad was one of, I did Mad TV, I guessed on a Mad TV in like 96.
Oh, wow.
I was a guest like back when it was Artie and like Nicole and David Herman.
And Phil,
Phil Lamar.
Oh, David Herman, yeah. And Callan.
Yes.
Brian Callan, yeah.
That's right.
Brian Callan. And,
did you play Chris Hardwick as Chris Hardwick?
Yeah, I played myself. It was not really a... that wasn't really a challenging role that they brought me on to do.
But you did a pretty good Chris Hardwick.
It was pretty good.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I had the
it was not the
yeah. I had the hair.
It was a little overdone. A little too much overdone.
Yeah. too much flair. Too much flair, we say. Too much flair.
Yeah.
I played myself in a sketch called Ozark Mountain Singled Out. And mm-hmm. as you might have imagined, the brother and sister end up with one another happens in the Ozark Mountains. It was a lot of fun. And then Mad really hung in there for a long time.
14 seasons.
Jesus.
You know, by the time we got there, it certainly felt, I don't know how you felt, Keegan. And we had whatever success we had on the show, but it felt like the fans was like, this is that new Mad TV, man. Fuck that. You know, give me Will Sasso, Alex Borstein,
right.
Motherfuckers. And you know, yeah, those guys are hilarious, but yeah, it was a different era. It felt like there was the first half of Mad TV's life, and then there was the second half of
Mad
TV's
life. It's hard to fuck with people's...
Matt Bronger years.
Yeah, Matt Bronger.
And then there was the Matt Bronger year.
The Matt Bronger month.
The Matt Bronger, Well, you know, it was. I think I'd say, you know what it was? It was like the first seven. So it was almost it really was almost half and half. It was the first 7 years, and that's when Tammy came in and Stephanie came in, and you know, like they started kind of populating the cast with different people. Mm-hmm. But it also the demographic. Well, it's just the demographic for our show now is vastly different than the demographic that watched Mad TV.
Right. Who watched Mad TV?
Dude, gay black men and Hispanic teenagers.
You actually know.
Yes, literally. That's, I mean, I, the every
occasional,
day.
Occasional homeless Asian person.
Yes.
Would stumble across the television.
you're just walking down, you're just walking past.
I'm La Brea.
Yeah, and then you just hear a guy walking by.
You are watching Mad TV.
It was.
Mad. Yeah. It was really, it's just different. It's a really different experience.
I could never figure out, literally had nothing to do with the magazine.
No, the first,
so frustrating.
That first season.
Spy versus Spy.
But it was just,
and a couple of Don Martin cartoons, wherever that guy was.
Don Martin.
But shouldn't the ending credits be like fold in and revealed?
Yes!
Of course.
That would have been awesome.
Now, Keegan and I, we campaigned in the last couple of years to try and do
a live action
live action Spy versus Spy.
When we think about bringing it back, and then the EP's like, and that's already the end.
That's all we heard.
Yeah.
So they trail off.
We wanted so bad. Well, that's why we do these kind of, like Ian Peele, we try to do a lot of these one-upsmanship scenes, because it's our chance to do kind of spy versus spy-y stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
We were talking about
the one that came out today online, the one at the restaurant.
The soul food thing.
Yeah, same episode. You were just talking about Michael Winslow, and I think until tonight's episode.
It's tonight.
We have this thing called McFerrin versus Winslow.
Finally!
Yes. Finally, someone is...
People have been clamoring for this.
People have been wondering who wins. And yeah, it's a ridiculous sketch. It's
that's fucking amazing.
It's all sound effects and score like that we do. They don't talk.
There's no dialogue.
And we turn them into like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. Like,
that's amazing.
It's this...
I think it's tonight.
I think it's tonight.
The magical Negro sketch was amazing as well.
Oh, thank you,
our good friend Peter.
Yes,
Atencio.
Mutual friend.
Oh, Peter Atencio.
He directs the whole thing.
He directs every episode, every scene, every episode.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw Peter's work was for your what was the thing was Freeloader's Super
Guide?
Deluxe Freeloader's Guide.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the first I saw Jonah, and that was the first time I was gonna hire Peter to do another thing. So I've known Peter for a few years.
Yeah, yeah. And so you saw me and said, "Who's the guy behind that guy?" Fuck that guy.
Well, you guys, you're
the guy I'm looking at.
You the other Ray Tencio joint, Drunk Day, was fucking amazing.
Yeah,
that
Peter,
you guys
anything
did.
Peter does, it's like he takes like just like, hey, this would be a fun. This is a fun idea. Mm-hmm. And then he just makes it into a short film.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's exactly everything he does. I mean, yeah. Every scene. So even scenes that are really, we have even a lot of, we don't have a ton, but we have a lot of what you would call straightforward sketches.
Yeah.
And even those he gives a nice treatment mm-hmm. to. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it just, I think the epic scale with the bitch sketch from the first episode.
Right.
Where like the escalation is there. It's a great game. It's like, it's a perfect sketch. Everything's escalated literally into space.
Into space.
Like, which is like the joke they say in any improv class. It's like, just don't end up in space.
Right. Yeah.
But it just looks every shot. And even the simplest shot, like they're in a basement and it creeps behind a wall.
It's so
or
great.
Or in a field and it comes down and it, like into the meadow. It just, it's fucking, he's
so terrific.
Yeah,
he's
it's just, insane.
He's
it's
really
hard
terrific.
To do, like, to, in sort of, in today's media climate, a sketch show is really hard to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like for the longest time, people always sort of defaulted, like, oh, we'll just throw this famous person into a sketch mm-hmm. show.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you, and
yeah.
then you see, like, you know, there has to be the right chemistry of people, and there has to be like a everyone has to have a certain complementary role and right. the right and but a like-mindedness.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Did you guys know each other before Mad?
We did. We did. Yeah. We'd known each other for a year and a half, maybe 2 years,
something like that.
Yeah, like but, around you know, there. You know, I worked at the Second City, and Jordan was at
Boom Chicago in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam.
Right?
And which is like the coolest improv experience I think anyone can have.
It is one of them, yes.
Was that the thing
no
Seth Meyers said? Was that the thing Seth Meyers said he was doing?
Yeah, Seth Meyers, you know, Jason Sudeikis was there. You know,
Heather Ann Campbell.
Ike Barinholtz, yeah. Great.
The girl from the dentist commercial?
The girl from the dentist commercial. Wait, who?
I can't remember her name.
Susie. Susie
Barrett. Yeah, yeah, Susie Barrett.
Susie Barrett.
Yeah, and the Fuck LA video, which was great.
Oh,
Fuck LA video was awesome.
Yeah, that's her. She was a Boom Chicago.
She's an alum.
It's like a nice little factory over there.
It was. And it provided Mad with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it was Seth Meyers' brother, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And
Nicole Parker.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so Jordan, there's two theaters in Chicago at the Second City. Is the ETC and there's the Main Stage. So our Main Stage cast flew to Amsterdam and performed at Boom Chicago for a week. The Boom Chicago guys came to Chicago and performed for a week, and that's where we met.
Oh, that's cool.
I wasn't on the Main Stage. I was on the ETC stage. So we got the opportunity to meet, and then it was like Comedy Crush, and let's hang out all night with our friends and talk about Monty Python and all that. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. It was just like,
and then a decade and a half later,
right.
a TV show. So keep friends.
Right. Keep friends.
I just get rid of them after a couple of years. I'm like, I lease them.
That's the problem.
No, I just lease like 3 years. And it's well, all right, I'm returning you.
Well, you know, the crazy thing is, though, now we're at this era where sketch comedy can happen in like anywhere.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's everybody's putting up funny videos online.
So does that make you, do you think that puts you on top of your game more? Because you're like, there's so much more competition in the world.
I think it makes us realize you can't come out with anything that feels stale. You can't feel anything. It's got to feel fresh and new and. Oh shit! They went there. They did it. Or you know.
Yeah. Well, no, of course. But the other challenge, right, is that how do you do it? Like sometimes people go, "Oh, it's fresh and new," but weird isn't always funny.
No,
that's the hard. That's
people
the
default to weird because it's just an easy out.
It's nearly impossible sometimes to end a sketch.
Ending.
And so you just want to take the right turn.
That always kept me from really wanting to go into sketch comedy. It's like, I can't write endings. I don't know.
That's
like, I have this premise and then how do you fucking tie that up?
Yeah. No, that is, but I mean, it's a challenge. It's a worthy challenge. You don't just go, oh no, we're never going to, you know, this is just the most horrible part of the job.
Right.
But, but we really, a lot of, we're really like into sneak attack, zigzaggy stuff. You know, bitch, like you said, Jonah, like it's just a perfect sketch.
Yeah.
But then we still like to, we love to do zigzaggy stuff where you kind of go, oh, you know, we have a scene.
I think it's going one way.
Yeah, like the movie heckler scene. We have, you know, two black guys in the movie theater talking. And you go, we want to elicit the response, well, I've seen this fucking sketch. This,
yeah.
You know,
and
this.
then zag on them. So,
yeah.
But that's hard. That's sweat equity. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because there you can have a fun idea and everyone's laughing, but then there's that part where everyone just kind of settles down. It's like, all right, but what
but
does it
mean? What's it about? Right.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Where does it go? Right.
And, you know, so you can get a mixed bag depending on who you're watching. There are times when I have wept with Where the Fern Grows. And there's times other, and I'm just like, I don't know. And so I feel old.
Yeah.
What are Tim and Eric doing? Right? I don't understand what's happening right now.
I mean, I feel the same way most of the stuff. I'm like, am I? This is it. This is the cliff.
I'm no longer hip. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that I'm even having this conversation with myself is a huge red flag.
Yeah. I mean, I always kind of get jealous for comedians or sketch or whatever from the 70s and 80s when, you know, it just felt like the ground was so much more fertile where it was like, because now people are watching with a library, now that everything's been cataloged for the last 40 years, so meticulously, people are constantly watching stuff and going, seen that. Where'd you go that? Oh, yeah, that's from that thing. And so it's so much harder now. It's so much harder to zig, like you were saying, and surprise
people.
Are
you guys the comedy cop inside the writer's room where it's just like...
Oh, no, there's always comedy police. We always... Somebody's always... somebody you'll self-assign during the day, and sometimes people will self-assign... like today, we'll go back and do a pitch after we leave here, and people will be pitching, and there's not a particular comedy police.
To be like, nope.
Yeah, well, it's like that's always my problem. Yeah, like in anything where it's like I'll say a thing, everyone will go, and they'll go, actually, you know, I just remembered it's from this
it's
old.
It's from blah blah
blah. Oh yeah, that happens a lot.
It's kind of like this one thing I saw this kid do on YouTube.
But also, that's the hard thing. But also, as writers though, you also have that library of shit in your head.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have those weird moments where you go, did I think of this or am I remembering this?
No, that happens to me frequently.
Like we should have seen this before. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, we have that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the hardest point though. When you recognize something or you've seen it and you know no one else has seen it, so it's like why not? But you know, there's
still
like,
feel weird.
Still feel weird. You can't do stuff that you've seen before.
Yeah, I think the best stuff has been, don't you think? Like if you some of the most successful stuff has been when you go, but no, I don't care if somebody this happened to me. Like I know that this event happened to me in my life. The best stuff, when it's in the pocket, is when you go, okay, I'm a biracial guy, and this biracial experience happened to me. Mm-hmm. So I've got to be able to write this scene, no matter even if I've seen the game before. Yeah. If sometimes that's hard. Like, look, there's only 7 games. Aristotle, he laid them all out about 3,000 years ago. There's only like 7 games.
Aristotle's hilarious too, by the way.
So funny.
So funny.
Yeah. So funny.
The birds, hilarious.
Seen it.
That was in the birds. No.
Aristophanes.
But so it's but it's a good challenge. I think it's a worthy challenge.
Yeah.
Well, it's always hard to. I mean, the thing that's always freaked me out about sketch is that I just love with stand-up that I can take right turns whenever I need to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you're in a sketch, man, you're fucking, that's it. You're in it.
You're locked in.
Especially when you're shooting it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Even if you could bail and green light stuff if you wanted to if you were on stage. But yeah, once you tape it, it's committed. And, mm-hmm. and that's the hard part. Yeah.
You must have in your head the sort of curve that you grade on where... You know, because you get ideas in your head, and you go, this would be the funniest thing ever, and you shoot it, and you're like, that is flat. What happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I feel, is there sort of a curve that you work on where you go, well, if I feel this about it, then it's probably going to play this way, which is a little counterintuitive to what I would normally feel.
I mean, I definitely look for the funniest things in the world for me. I mean, there are certain things that make you laugh, and then there are certain things that make you laugh when you think about it the next day and the next day and the next day.
Yeah.
And those things that are just always fun, like, you know, the bitch scene, you know, the idea of two guys talking about their wives and
also, I just remember the, nah, man, I shit my pants.
Nah, man, I put my pants. Two gangsters talking about my pants. Always funny to me. I know that. And so that, I know, is going to translate into laughs.
For me, Chris, you know, it's like I'm learning, like I feel like I'm learning something where sometimes I'm learning now the difference between, as a producer, you go, this is playing funny on paper, but it's learning from Peter.
Yeah.
It's going to take longer when we're making it, like when we're in the edit. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if it's going to work. if we can't get the edit right.
Comedy is really fucking hard to shoot.
It's tough to shoot.
It's even tougher to edit.
It's even tougher to edit. Yeah.
Strange.
That's why the people that are good at it just get the jobs all the time.
All the time, right.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, there's some stuff that, you know, Keegan and I are like, dude, I will murder this if they let me do it.
Let me do it. I will totally destroy
you. You can't see it on the paper, but this is my wheelhouse. I know how to play this. I know how to get that laugh.
Which sketch from the season do you think that
this season? I don't know if they let us do it.
but remember how much everybody laughed at McFerrin Winslow.
Mm-hmm.
The studio audience, we were very pleased with how much they were enjoying it.
This is a good one. The bitch one itself is not a poor example because they were always on board with that. But, you know, when we had to perform it. Paper, you couldn't see why that scene was funny. The same thing with the flicker scene that happened. We did last week.
There's no way to just.
There's
you
no
can't
way.
Describe it. Yeah.
And on paper, they're like, you know, I don't know if this is gonna work. But then you add Peter directing it like an action film.
You widen the scope and just make it epic.
Something mundane, epic.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you have to also, you know, develop that trust with your crew, or they have to trust you. It's just like. Yeah. No, if we, you know, it's like building up credit where you go, I know it doesn't, but if you just trust us, it'll be fine. And there's a huge difference between editing something funny and editing for comedy where you're like, oh, no, don't push in right there because that's too much. You know.
Yeah. Let people find it. Don't shove their
Yeah, like a Python sketch or like a Zucker Brothers thing. Like the funny shit happens in the background. If they zoom in really fast on the comedy part, then you're like, oh, that wasn't as.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to do the audience doesn't know they have a job. But the problem is they love doing their job.
Yeah.
So please fucking give them breadcrumbs. Don't just go, and the candy house is that way. And then there's it's interesting. They get titillated by doing a certain amount of work.
Sure.
They only do 20% of the work. But let them do all 20. Don't give them 8% of the work. Let them do all 20%.
Because there's fun. There's fun in discovery.
In discovery.
It's like opening a present. Like I didn't know
that's what I thought was
right. Yeah. I think what people like about that bitch scene is that it's never said that these gentlemen are afraid of their wives. We just show it.
Don't tell. Yeah.
Exactly.
And especially in a visual, like comedy in a visual medium. You've really, there's lots of stand-up, not a visual medium.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so who cares? I could listen to you.
Right.
Or I close my eyes and enjoy the show just as much. Mm-hmm. But you just got to get it right. And I feel like, I'm really trying to think, Jonah, you know what? The way you play the character in the medical marijuana sketch and the way you play the character in What's the Joke?
Which hasn't aired yet.
Okay. But there's a couple times when you see characterizations and you go, Oh, wow! I really didn't see that on the page.
Or Keegan is, you know, particularly physical comedian. So there's a lot of things, a lot of sketches where it's like, you know, you can see us going through a sketch and be like, okay, and then Keegan will be physically funny here. You know, we just, you know.
Has anyone done a supercut of how many times you've during the interstitial segments you've been on the ground?
No, I thought it
was just put it
it's
together.
A great idea. Yeah. No, it's that's like, and that's part of it is. I was on a sitcom a couple years ago, and my showrunner
Gary Unmarried.
Gary Unmarried.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my showrunner, toward the end of the season, we had a shortened season. It was like we went from 22 to 17, and at the end of the season, there were two episodes where they let me do more physical stuff when they realized it. And what my showrunner told me, he said, the end of the second season and the beginning of the third season of any show is where you're in your pocket, because if you think you could. We could take a Will and Grace script right now from season 3 to 6, and there are no jokes in it. There's jokes for Eric and there's jokes for Deborah, but with Sean and Megan, it's just Jack and Karen.
Oh, really?
He said all you have to do is write the scenario, and Karen's voice gets the laughs, and Sean's and Jack's mannerisms get the laughs.
Insane.
I was like, really? And he goes, read the script, no jokes.
That's crazy. I will not, but really.
And that's when I started reading Will and Grace scripts all the time.
That's my bedside reading.
The same thing happens with hosting this sounds arrogant. I don't really have to audition for hosting stuff anymore.
No.
But when I did, you know, they would always write, like, the host sides were all this generic host patter, and they would write jokes in, and I would always go in and go,
kill all those because it's personality driven. It's not joke driven because then if you're making jokes and they don't land, then people turn on you fast. Yeah,
right.
No, it's true. And but people forgive if you don't hit a joke that is clearly off the cuff, people do forgive.
And I think what's interesting about our writing staff, we're very, very, very fortunate to have the writing staff we do because
Colton Dunn,
Becky Drysdale,
Charlie Sanders.
Oh my God, Rebecca Drysdale.
Yes.
Did you ever see the? This is about to get awkward. Did you ever see this? I saw her do a sketch at Aspen a couple of years ago. It was just her as a rapper.
Yeah.
I think I have seen her do her rap bit. Yeah.
It's just she just says the N-word
for
like five straight minutes, but in a rap. Like, and she's
hey,
this tiny.
Nigga, what?
I can say that.
Chris is doing the movement.
I'm doing.
George's doing the voice.
I'm doing the movements they do.
He's listeners at home, he's showing his tattoo that says that word.
He's mouthing it, but he's mouthing ER as opposed to the A.
And it's making me uncomfortable, to say the least.
No, I'm just saying there should have been a black version of ER.
It was called ah.
That's called ah.
Yeah,
Chris Hardwick, now on our writing staff.
That is going to get written. Okay.
Please.
We have to send you money. What they've been doing is they've now in this. But they've been writing like strong games in the scenes and at the same time and going, oh, this will be good for Jordan. Oh, this will be good. Jordan does this well. Keegan does this well. And the game. So it's not. So the funny thing is, we're really not in the market for tons of like heavy, strong character stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's scenic stuff. It's more Mr. Showy than it is in Living Color.
It's so important. No, that's a really interesting comparison. Yeah. Because in Living Color was so like, we're crazy characters.
Yeah, everything was a character. It was like Groundlings.
Groundlings, exactly. Yeah.
Which is where you start to see the different delineations between like, oh, Groundlings does this kind of character training, and Second City does this kind of character training.
IO does this.
Yeah, like everyone kind of has their own mutant power.
Yeah.
Yes, right. And that's, I mean, I think also a lot of UCB people on our staff, because of that, because game.
They're witty. Yes. They're witty. Yeah, they're quick and witty. And then Second City, it's a little bit more sketch training and more structure.
Groundlings is character stuff.
And Groundlings is character. Yeah,
and writing.
Yeah. And writing. They really focus on writing. And for Second City, it's more, let's try to make a nice classic sketch. Mm-hmm. You know,
fascinating always to watch the different phases that SNL goes through in the recruiting.
Yeah.
You know, there's like period where they had Tina and they were bringing people from Chicago, like the Raj, Rachel Dratch.
And after
Tina, now it's Groundlings again.
Groundlings for the longest time. Well, Groundlings mad too, though, because you had, Alex Borstein was a Groundling.
Borstein.
Michael McDonald.
And Nicole Sullivan.
Phil Lamar. Yeah.
Was she not a Groundling?
I don't believe so.
No.
But Phil definitely was.
Oh, Phil definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but all those characters, those were like Saturday night main company Groundling shows, and then they just they went on to
and they just took
but
it.
Also, but even before the Tina Fey era and Adam McKay era, there was the stand up era where it was all there was a ton of stand ups. Yeah. David Spade, Norm Macdonald, and all those dudes, and Dana Carvey, all these guys.
Right. Sandler. And then
actually pretty amazingly successful. And I think what stand-ups have that the improv and sketch, it's harder to get. Stand-ups know who they are.
Yeah, they
have
they
their
know who
bit,
they are.
And that's that works on TV.
Yeah, they
you see Adam Sandler.
No one but themselves.
So you know how to write to that person.
Yeah.
And it works, and sometimes it works amazingly, and sometimes it doesn't work.
But then you see Kristen Wiig, and you're like, anything you're in, you just find, she's one of those people that just can find the essential element of any character and just hit it.
And she's also able to maintain her thing as well, which is I wouldn't be able to describe, but the types of things that she observes with her characters
and even
through line.
And there's something about her, even in the midst of her strongest, broadest character, there is a wig reservedness. It's never too big.
Yeah.
I always can go, there could be a lady at Target like that. I mean, it's for me, for her, that's just my estimation. It's never too huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's to her
advantage.
Yeah. Credit.
Except for the tiny hands lady.
From the Lawrence Welk show. That one is nuts.
There's that this sketch and improv background does give a little bit of a adaptability, a bit of range.
Right,
you know,
right.
My hero is of course Phil Hartman. You know,
oh my god,
it just sort of champions so many sketches without without grabbing the forefront of the scene, without in a support role.
Yeah, everything seemed to move to him.
Yeah.
As opposed to him grabbing everything.
There's a certain confidence with that, though. I mean, he was always so confident and grounded with his characters that it never felt like he was trying to chew the scenery. Mm-hmm. It was just, he was just, you know, front and center.
And trying to do it as well as possible.
He's a caveman lawyer.
I mean, I'm just a lawyer.
I do know is the law.
I think, and then I remember after that, pedigree, then there was a weird moment in there after Lorne came back when it was all actors. Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, we've talked about this before. Robert Downey Jr. Yeah.
That remember
Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
And then the blonde guy Terry Sweeney.
Terry Sweeney,
actor.
Terry Sweeney was an actor.
And Denitra Vance was an actor.
Denitra Vance is my favorite SNL reference of all time.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen Jonah like drop Denitra Vance in an SNL conversation. Everyone just kind of looks at him and he's like, "Come on, you guys, Denitra Vance,
Jonah Ray, my new favorite person."
Yeah,
Denitra, because Denitra also she was in a great movie with the youngest Arquette, his name Alexis Arquette, the youngest brother, Alexis Arquette. Tim Roth, now we're on Nerdist.com.
Yes. We are
in the podcast version of the Ninth Circle of Hell. This is crazy. We're talking about Demetra Vance.
Alexis Arquette, Tim Roth, and Denitra Vance. It's an independent film, 93.
Really?
Yes.
What's it called?
Ray. Jonah Ray just left the building. He's going to jump in at the Boneyard.
Netflix Instant Watch.
Jump in at the Boneyard.
Is that the cross-gender?
Yes. So there's the two sisters, David, and then this one.
Well, now, when you say it like that.
In the opening credits of that movie, you just say, you know, Tim Roth, it has the words on stage, but when it gets to Denitra Vance, you just hear Pardo going, Denitra Vance! Just for
no reason. No, I mean, what you've described sounds like the most amazing film to watch.
It was really good, and she plays a smaller part, and you go, oh, but there was that era. There were like six of them that were just straight-up actors. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they were trying to... Because it's always hard when they overhaul the cast.
Yes.
And so I think they were like all those people were recognizable young actors.
Yes.
And so they went famous young comedy actors, as opposed
Joan Cusack too, right?
And Joan Cusack.
But then what you realize is like, sketch comedy is a very specific comedy muscle.
It was. Yeah.
As opposed to just like. We are comedy actors.
We're doing comedy technically.
You know, it's just different. Just different. I really want to pull up some of those old sketches and see how they read.
Yeah. It would be interesting because I'd like to read them and also see. Is it on there? Jumping at the Boneyard.
Get some Will and Grace's in there too.
Checking it out.
I was gonna say they probably don't hold up, but now I think like they probably didn't hold up then.
No.
Right.
No,
well, you know when you
mimic Alec Baldwin's The Mimic holds up for me. It's one of my all time favorites. He's the mimic. It's like the old 60s spy show.
Oh yes.
Hello, this is Mrs. Devereaux.
It's a great sketch. Yeah. And you think of the old sketches, the old sketches, and you know that's the other weird part is when people say. It was best. You watch an entire episode from a 1977 episode.
Very hard to watch.
Very difficult to watch.
Three sketches throughout the entire.
I mean, you have to.
It always a Bassomatic was good.
Bassomatic.
Yeah. That was always solid.
Training with donuts.
A little chocolate donuts.
I mean,
I've seen the same people talk. You know, through these generations, it's always like, man, this. It sucks right now, and during, you know, while the Sandler Spade, this is awful. This is the worst time. 4 years later, Spade Sandler, that was the time.
But
it sucks.
Yeah,
I actually love.
Everyone only remembers the sketches they like. Right.
No one has ever said that about the Robert Downey Jr. era.
They've never said that.
You are correct, sir.
I fucking love the Billy Crystal years with Christopher Guest.
86, 87.
Yeah, and Harry Shearer.
Yes.
The most underrated.
That was such a fucking great era of SNL.
The Synchronized Swimming with those.
Marty Short. That was a fucking good. That was a good season.
Billy Crystal and Chris Guest when they were those two.
You get one of those 16-pound dumbbells, you find around the rumpus room.
Of course.
Those were great. But I feel like I've been reading now, which I've never seen before. I've seen, there seems to be a certain air of, no, SNL is actually pretty strong right now. Like, people seem to be pretty happy with it.
I'm digging it. Which I think, and I agree, I think that that means it's more than that. That means, you know, if you take that curve, I think it means it is
that
one of the best.
Really, really well.
And part of that has to do with the fact that you have a cast that has been on there for longer than casts were on there.
Cast together.
You know, the contracts changed from 5 years to 8 years, I believe, about 9 years ago so I think we're part of us is there are our friends and family a little bit, you know. It's when new guys come in, that's when it really sort of,
it's just like when any new person comes into your group
did they dump two?
Paul Britton and then Jenny Slate.
She got a season, right?
Yeah
That's a while ago. Paul Britton I thought was I thought they were both funny.
You said that you liked them. You liked them both. I've been on hiatus. I don't know why. I haven't been. You know what? I've been.
It's gotta be tough
going
over there,
to sleep
man.
Earlier.
It's gonna be tough.
It's horrible. And so
you have a full time job. You get tired.
But I think that from what I've seen, they look like they're such a strong group now.
Yeah.
I think it's also becoming. It's no longer a fad to hate on SNL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Like, no one cares if you hate on SNL anymore.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know? And people even say that as just like a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, it sucks. Have you seen it? No, not for 17 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And you look back at those, but that last Groundling, that initial Groundling era was terrific with O'Terry and Farrell and, it'd be great.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
So what's the sort of, what's the plan with Key and Peele? Like, how do you... Do you want to do the show? Like, would you guys want to do this show for like 6-7 seasons, or is it sort of like, you know, are you just sort of like whatever they say we'll do?
Well, for negotiation purposes, no.
I mean, you know, is this the kind of thing though, where creatively
television, keep it short.
Creatively, would you rather do it for just a few seasons and kind of get out while it still feels fresh to you and then go off and do like movies or something else? Or do you want to like have a good 6-7 years, you know, if you had your preference to really, you know, like perfect?
I think the former for me.
I was going to say the former as well.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I would
you
rather
be a team.
I would rather be meteoric. If it can be meteoric, if it can be, I'm not being presumptuous that it is. That's how I'd like it to be. I mean, we are.
So I feel like the more time you give an audience to digest you on television actually works against you, it seems, in some ways to get into film.
I agree.
People say, oh, well, I can see him on my TV. Why am I going to spend this money to go out there?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like now I can see them on the internet. Why do I need to watch TV?
Right. Well, right. Of course. Right. Yeah.
So like, I feel like what happened to Community is what, you know, got canceled. You know, people are, you know, incensed because a lot of people love that show. I think it's the best thing that could have happened to all those guys. It's like, it's Arrested Development.
Right. So now they're wanted. Yeah.
Exactly. And they are coming back.
Arrested Development or Community?
Community's coming back.
Oh, okay. Starts, I think, this week.
Thursday.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
By the time this goes up, it will have already started.
Poor
it's
guys.
It's so good to have it back.
Yep. It's good. It's been
you
great.
You saw the future again.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
he's arrived.
What's his mustache?
Jonah Ray in Time Drunk. Guys, I think I can time travel. I've jumped ahead a week. Like, you were just fucking drunk.
We're just wasted.
Quantum leak.
No. Chris, I like Talking Dead.
Oh, thanks, man.
I'm enjoying it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Because I am. I'm a little bit of a freak about the show, and so is my wife. And so it's good when you have something to do with your partner
on a Sunday night.
On a Sunday night, no less. Yeah.
Late at night.
It's got Walking Talking Dead, and then it's also got Eastbound and Down.
It's got Eastbound and Down.
Mm-hmm. Too short.
I tried, and I feel here's one of those weird things. Like, I'm having another one of these Tim and Eric moments. Like, I feel like I should love everything that David Milch does.
Yeah.
Can't stick with Luck. It's not working for me.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, thank you, Jonah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I watched one episode.
Atencio is one of those guys that just love it, but he's like a Michael Mann.
He's a Michael Mann freak. One of our Ian Roberts is one of our executive producers.
Oh, I didn't know Ian was one
Ian
of your
Roberts
producers.
Is one
oh my
of
God.
Our EPs.
Mm-hmm.
And
UCB? Not UCB. UCB guy.
Yeah, and he loves Milch too, but he's not been able to cotton onto it either. I just, you know what it is? You can't mumble Milch. And you know that Michael Mann is telling them to do that.
Yeah, yeah,
my wife's worked with Michael Mann a couple times, and it's just like he doesn't. He wants everything to be so. There's like too much verisimilitude.
Yeah.
If I can't understand what anybody's saying, you know what I mean?
Is that does Peter bug you about that all the time? Does he want to know about Michael Mann constantly?
No, we've talked about it a couple times. Oh wait a minute, no, we haven't. I think I've never mentioned to Peter.
Well, he's...
That would be... He's a Michael Mann freak.
He's
I know
weird
it.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. My wife
he's really
like,
weird about
like,
it.
Peter, it's like he seems like he'd be like an indie auteur guy, but he's like, Michael Mann, fucking James Cameron. He just loves all these like, big action movies.
Sonnenfeld.
Guys. Yeah.
Like, you like Barry Sonnenfeld?
Yeah, right.
Barry Sonnenfeld doesn't even like Barry Sonnenfeld.
But the first Men in Black, though.
Pretty great.
Yeah, the first Men
pretty
in Black,
pretty
great.
Pretty great.
I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah, but then you saw the second one, right?
I did see the second one.
And you've seen the trailer for the third one.
I've not seen the trailer for the third one.
House of Lies is on Sundays. Oh, and that's okay.
I haven't checked it
it's
out.
It's okay.
I haven't been in there. I tried a little bit.
Is that Cheadle?
Cheadle.
Cheadle and Ben Schwartz.
And Ben Schwartz,
Ben,
who I love.
Yeah, Ben's great.
I love Ben Schwartz. Yeah.
Ben's really great.
Yeah.
And then homegirl from your thing, Veronica Mars.
Yeah. We went to high school. We went to the same high school. Yeah. Kristen Stewart.
I am Kristen Bell.
Kristen Stewart. Yeah, Cornell Stewart.
Cornell
Stewart Knight, yeah. I mean, you'd never know it.
He was a great human.
Did you guys really mobile quarterback.
This just popped back in my head of Saturday Night Live. Did you guys watch the Maya Rudolph episode she hosted?
I just saw
the Obama clip.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was.
Yeah, there was an amazing sketch. Yeah. I think I told you about it. It's the Maya Angelou prank show.
Oh, no.
From the makers of the Betty White prank show comes Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Cage Bird Laughs. And it's just her just pranking her esteemed colleagues.
That's amazing.
It's
I love great. Watching
it's,
Maya Rudolph.
Because
she's
anything.
When she comes back and does stuff on SNL, the level of comfort that she has is so fantastic.
It really
it's
is.
Her home. It's like she feels good there, it seems, you know.
But even on the new stuff, like on Up All Night, I watched an episode the other day with my cousin. I was
she takes
laughing.
That. She takes
just
that
goes,
show.
Oh, and thank you. I mean, everything she does, she just really... Talk about being in that niche. Like, there's a perfect sketch comedian for you right there.
Yeah.
A perfect sketch animal. Yeah, she's... Yeah.
And she's great in that movie that with Krasinski.
Away We Go, I want to say? No.
No, isn't it?
Is it? Away We Go?
Like yeah, Away We Go.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
She's really... She's one of those... She's a real can-do-no-wronger for me. Yeah. Yeah, she's pretty
And
great.
So sweet, too. So sweet. Another groundling, right?
A groundling. Yes. Yeah.
Also, sang on the second Rentals album. She was in the Rentals.
Ah, that's right. I remember. Did she really? Yeah, I mean, to be such a cool comedy person and also have a musical pedigree.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Of course, her mother, Minnie Riperton, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, the Rentals, as in the one that from.
When Matt Sharp.
When Matt Sharp, yeah.
He left Weezer. He did as a
Friends
side project,
of P.
Then he left. Yeah, Friends of P.
Yeah.
Second album's actually.
Did Rick Ocasek produce that album, right?
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I think that's why they wrote the Friends of P is Paulina Porizkova.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
When you're friends with P.
Yep.
A little music trivia for you there.
I'm loving it.
I'm McDonald. What are you doing here?
Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry. Wait, who am I supposed to be? What did you say?
Kevin McDonald.
Which one?
Kevin McDonald.
Oh, Kevin. Oh, I was just doing a little Kevin McDonald impersonation for a second.
Anytime you do that voice, you have to end it with cat on my head. Cat on my head.
Yeah, I was just doing it. There's a cat on my head.
Yeah, I think that's the only Kevin McDonald impression
in North America.
In circulation.
But who's going to challenge it?
I find the impressions that I know are going to. You know,
they're just.
No, oh my god!
I try to do impressions of my friends and then just hope they get really famous. Right. I wait. If Kyle Kinane pops off even more, I am set.
I am good to go. Okay, that's
what I have. And get him a job. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's a backwards way to do it.
Fred.
Armisen.
Armisen.
Fred.
I first started, I almost said Fred and Carrie.
F Dizzy, yeah.
But Armisen used to do all of the, he would do all of everyone in the comedy circles.
Oh, really?
Just he was. Oh, he would?
Yeah, uh-huh. he would do everyone, and it was fucking amazing.
How do he and Carrie know each other?
Just through music.
Oh, through music.
Yeah, because he was in Trench Mouth.
She's Slater-Kinney.
And she was in Slater-Kinney, and I guess they toured a bit, like, in the 90s.
You can listen to that episode that we haven't aired yet.
Oh, yeah, we got to put that up.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had Fred and Carrie on.
Just wait till the season's over.
It is. Oh, it's done now.
Yeah,
on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's just, I guess they knew each other just from the music scene, which is like that's neat that happens.
That is and to cross over in that way. I thought that was really cool, and I enjoy Portlandia. I really
and she's fucking great.
She's so really great. Yeah. She really is.
She really is.
She really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
pretty effortless.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no pretension and no acting. There's just no acting. She just does it. Yeah, she's really great. Yeah.
I like how they do that kind of that delocated too. When she's playing a man, they just pitch her voice down.
Right.
Who cares? She still suits. She's like, yeah, but she's a man now. It's great.
When we were writing the pilot, I remember Jordan. Remember you had come to me because I had not known about Portlandia yet, and Jordan had come to me with it was really more than anything else, rhythm stuff. Like,
oh yeah,
watch this scene with Armisen because we're both huge Armisen fans. So he's like, watch this scene with Fred. On Portlandia, and it helped us a lot with rhythm.
So
like,
much of his stuff is musical.
It's musical, you know? Even the way he does his comedy. Yeah,
but the way they edit too.
Absolutely,
pretty flawless.
And they heavily score their scenes. It's you can tell that music's really important to both of them. Yeah,
Has it been a pretty? How's the experience been so far with Comedy Central? Has it been pretty? Do you still feel like you're having to sell them on a lot of stuff, or are they kind of like a little more hands off now?
No, I mean we went the method of sort of overwhelming them with sketches to approve and stuff. So I think we have them on the ropes as far as
all the time. Right? No, they've really. It's been a pretty fan. Well, I'm looking for my network executive.
Jim Sharp, I'm looking for Jim.
Be careful what you say, guys.
We've had a very, really, really felicitous relationship with them. It's
good.
Really been great. I mean, it's just we don't have weekly tussles.
And by that he means like it was like the show Felicity, how they had
exactly
how she wasn't who she was when she came back after the drug,
but because she cut her hair,
and wrote a lot of sketches.
And wrote 260 sketches. we've been having a really good relationship with them. It's been really going really well.
I mean, our whole thing is like we said, we're looking for something new. They're looking for something fresh. They've had success certainly with things that push the envelope, push the South Parks, the Toshes. So as far as the boundaries of where they're willing to go, they're open to let us go there.
Yeah, since it's what they want to do anyway.
But do you guys ever ebb in the way of just you ever lean towards like offensive? Like, is that ever a thing where you're like, oh, this might rub people the wrong way. Let's keep pushing this way.
I think we usually go for, you know, at least one thing that strikes you as, wow, I haven't seen this, or this is different, or this is farther than I've seen gone. And then from there, what we like to do is sort of pat it. You know, for instance, we had that slavery scene a while ago. We were on the auction block. And I mean, you could theorize that alone, you know, two African-Americans taking their shirt off and getting on an auction block for a sketch comedy scene. How can that possibly be okay? But then the rest of the scene, you know, what we do is we like to take that finesse and really make it a human question.
Finesse Mitchell?
What about finesse?
I don't know. You just said finesse, so I just thought about
Mitchell.
and then we cut to finesse Mitchell.
So there you go. I mean, we used like I would say Jonah, we have not found ourselves doing that thus far. Like I haven't gone, but let's. It's about getting them accurately more than it's about getting them more.
I
wouldn't try to get them more inaccurately than trying to, like, let's really find get our finger on the pulse of this thing and then just get all on top of it and massage it and get all over it, as opposed to going, let's go further, you know. I think offensive is not, it doesn't come up a lot in discussion. Like, we're not trying to offend.
We're trying to prove why something is not offensive more often than.
Don't you feel though that we're, you know, it's so we're in such a difficult time because of the internet, everyone has a voice, which is great, but everyone is offended by something, and so then people will rally around, that's offensive. It's like, yeah, but comedy is supposed to help us deal with things that are uncomfortable, and comedy is supposed to poke fun at things and satirize things, and, you know, it should be a little challenging, and and sometimes it should be a little offensive, but not in the way that, you know, we're saying, look how stupid this underrepresented group is, but just more like, hey, you know, we're all part of this experience, and we're just trying to deal with it.
That is a lot. That is a lot of what we're doing. And we've been saying a lot. We kind of get into this place now when we do interviews and we're honing into a pattern almost, you know, where you go, let's make sure we make that point or this point. And something that keeps coming up frequently for us, Jordan just said it in a brand new way, which is we're actually trying to point out why something's not offensive. And how we do that is there's no formula for it. But the fact of the matter remains, drama and comedy has to be about people behaving badly. It has to be about that. The people get bent out of shape because we have color in our, we have melanin in our skin. So they go, come on, man, y'all making fun of black people all the time. We're making fun of human foibles.
Right.
It's the vagaries of the human existence. So now when it gets, when it gets weird, is I'll go, okay, so Jonah walked in and we did bits at the beginning of the thing, like I was drunk the whole time. Now to some people.
That wasn't a bit, man.
But like, that's perfectly okay. Yeah. But then to somebody else who's a teetotaler, I just found it offensive. A man just walks in the room, he's been drunk for an
entire week.
You know, it's like you can't win.
Oh. That was my inner monologue. I always try to say to people, you know, inside anything comedic, there is a seed of something that's horrible.
Yes, always.
And so you have laughed at things that were horrible to other people, so then you can't get all your fucking underwear in a wad how come you're talking about adopted Russian kids?
That's the big thing.
And it's like, listen, be offended by everything or be offended by nothing. But you can't
parse.
It's selfish to pick and choose and be like, yeah, I laughed at that other person, but I am affronted right now.
Well, here's something really interesting that came up during Human Giant is there was a sketch about like they tag it at the end where it's like this mother doesn't have the super strength of like that some mothers do when their child is in danger. And it turns out it's because the child is an adopted child.
That was Linda Cardellini's sketch.
She's like, I guess I can't love my child, my adopted child, like my real child.
Oh,
and
boy.
Then it goes into a card, and you just hear a kid's voice going, "No mother can." And then and it turns into a PSA at the end of this thing. And they were like, the guy was like one of the execs at MTV was like, "I'm insulted. I'm adopted. I can't believe you're doing this. This is offensive." And you know, and he started picking out at other things. And then Tom Giannis just lied and said, hey, man, I'm adopted. And he's like, really? Yeah, this is me trying to get out some of my problems. Oh, and like, they're like, oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know if that's a good producer or a scummy producer.
That's the best producer.
That's the best producing. Yeah.
Who will make himself adopted to get the comedy sketch.
Yeah. He's filling out the paperwork and everything.
Yeah, Tom's great. I know
Tom. Now, to me, and it's comedy brains, that I'm adopted. So it's what's interesting is I go, but why is that not funny? Now, it might not be. Now, see, the funny thing, I'm the adopted. So it's funny to me.
Yeah.
If it was not going to be funny to anybody, it'd not be funny to my mom.
Right.
It'd be your mom would be offended. Why would you be offended?
Right.
Well, I told
me and my mom are very upset.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I told my mom about this sketch.
But that was also a great sketch because she started a moving company and she would move furniture, but her child had to be in danger for her to move the furniture.
Yeah. Right. So she has to knock over a bookshelf and she go, ah!
And then pick up the bookshelf and move it.
It's so not about that thing.
You really nailed it on the head. Anybody who is offended by a joke that they find insensitive to a particular group, it's like, really? Well, you better not have ever laughed.
You better not have ever laughed at any. And that's the other thing is like this blog on HuffPost that a friend of one of our EPs a friend wrote, and he said, I have to respond. I'm an African American. I have to respond to this other African American. Apparently, he just posted it, and it was just you were reading it to me, and you were saying he was saying he said uplifting the black man satire. It's like uplifting anybody's not comedy. That's pay it forward. Go see pay it forward. This is comedy.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when you put out a tweet and it's like an offensive thing, like I had a few when Davy Jones from the Monkees died, and the guy's like, how dare you make fun of Davy? It's like, you know what he did? He did this, he did this, he did this. I'm like, yeah, but if I mention all the great things he did, it's not going to be a funny tweet.
It's not a funny tweet. No, exactly. That's why I'm tweeting. Yeah.
Also, people, you know, I don't know, people never seem to get over being offended is okay.
Yeah.
That is an okay thing with our culture, with our country. Mm-hmm.
People want to be mad, though. They want to get fucking mad.
And that's fine. And it, but, you know, that's when it's when it crosses over into things like, no, you can't put that mosque there because it offends us.
Right.
Then that's like, whoa, that's where
it crosses over. But it doesn't offend them.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we're such, you know, and we really become a culture of coddlers, too. Like, whenever someone is like, hey, I'm upset by that. Then we're like, oh, well, okay, it's okay. We'll fix it. Then a lot of times, it's almost better to be like, yeah. Sorry.
Right. The poop.
What are you going
to? Janet Jackson boob.
Yeah.
What about that? The fallout from that Janet Jackson boob 6 years ago. It still happens.
Still happening.
Like, we can't say nigga on the air without a dispensation because of that boob.
Really?
Of
that boob.
Because of the black boob?
Yes. It was a Viacom issue.
Black boob. Now we can't be black boob.
Well, we used to say, you know, we didn't, it was like we were railing. But we used to say, you know, we used to say to our network executives, we're like, guys, just out of curiosity, just Jordan and I, we're just simply curious, just curious. So why was there a sketch called The Nigger Family, but we can't, we're just asking on Chappelle. And they were like, you guys have to understand, Viacom lost their mind. We forget how long ago Chappelle was.
Yeah.
That was 2003.
Yeah, almost 10 years.
That was 2003. And so you forget that happened. That sketch was written, that probably was written and already aired prior to the boob coming out. And then Viacom went, nope. And they rocked down on everything.
Wow.
And then he got to keep doing it. They grandfather clawsed him. And we're like, oh, wow. Well, 6 years?
We worked it out, though.
With standards and practices, though, there's no... With standards and practices, every channel's different. There's no real set of rules. I mean, there are certain things you can't say.
That is true. That is true.
But a lot of it has to do with whatever kind of mood the S&P guy is in. Mm-hmm. And the way that standards and practices works is that, you know, if a couple people complain about something, then it's over.
Right.
If a couple people call in and say, I was really offended about that sketch with the donkey, you could see its penis. And I'm offended by donkey penises. And they're like, all right, no more donkey penises.
No more donkey penises. No more donkeys.
Yeah, no more donkeys. Yeah. It's this one where I'm bathed. It's like a kelp forest of donkey cocks.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just like, ah! I was like, I haven't eaten in like a month. And so I just, anything I can get in my mouth.
Just start gnawing on the donkey.
Doesn't seem like that was the background.
Yeah, exactly.
Seem like that
you guys have all had
background.
That dream, right? Where you're just like, I can't get enough of this. It's just like every, just filling every available orifice.
You said donkey penises.
Yeah.
And you said that, you did say they were in the background, and now they seem very forefront.
They're very yeah.
Well, seems almost.
It's funny where they're in the background, but it was in the foreground. It's just
almost,
sexy.
Almost you're the background.
Wait,
of this.
Wait, what do you mean? You don't you don't ride a donkey on its back, guys, right? Right?
No, it rides you on your back.
Right.
Yeah. Now I'm understanding.
You understand. We squeezed
some nice fucked up shit in there.
No, but it was great because but then they were like, no, we'll do it, and they gave us a dispensation, so we have like an episode where everything links together, which would have been two episodes ago.
And
it worked beautifully.
And it was a TVMA episode.
They said we can make that episode TVMA, and then you can say, because it was the one with shot in the dick.
Yeah.
And then we had the knee graph.
Yeah.
And so we got to say the N word with unmitigated frequency.
Mm-hmm. Shot in the dick. That's the sketch that my name is kind of in. It's Colton on the screen.
It says, yes.
Gahona Ray Rodriguez.
Oh. That's right. Gahona Ray Rodriguez. That's right.
Well,
that's right.
You've been immortalized, my friend.
Yes. So anyone who knows my last name.
And plus, your Colton impression is going to be useful very soon.
Yes, very, very soon.
I have to drink a smoke pot and barbecue for a weekend. So I'm able to do a good Colton impression.
Oh, man.
This was so much fun having you guys on. That was an hour. That's 63 minutes.
Yeah, we did. Oh, wow.
Right?
It's like whatever
the clock
shows.
Up there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we started early, right?
Yeah,
we started a little
can't
early.
Fast forward to this.
Well, this feels like we just all smoked weed and talked about Maya Rudolph for an hour.
I know. This is the best.
I'm naturally high on comedy.
All right.
I don't need drugs. I just need good energy in the room.
And a donkey dick.
And a strong game.
And just
strong
like
game and a donkey penis.
Yeah, just like interwoven. Like if you could do a quilting bee with dicks, like just like that.
Sober guy in the room
I don't need to drink to have a good time.
Right.
I'm sorry you feel that way, Jonah.
Thanks so much,
anyway,
Chris.
Yeah, Jordan King, thank you guys for coming on.
Kim Peel here.
Kim Peel.
We're here with the geezer and the douche at the 9 o'clock block.
It's Maya and the donkey dick.
I just took two words that we said during the thing and reincorporated them into a callback. But thanks guys for being here. On Twitter, where can people...
Jordan Peel for me.
And at Keegan M. Key for me.
Oh, yeah. At Jordan Peel. Right. Yeah. At.
And then I'm on Facebook. I'm actually more of a Facebook guy than a Twitter guy.
I'm not on Facebook.
Yeah. I'm trying to, I'm moving. I'm doing it. I'm making like the
He's
transfer.
He's doing it.
But,
He's
really gone. You know, I have my fan page and everything on Facebook and stuff.
Nice.
Like that, so yeah.
Well, congratulations on the show again.
Thanks
and,
a lot, you guys. This was a blast.
Oh, super fun to have you. I mean, I feel like we could talk about. It's clear that you guys get as granular with your with comedy.
Yes.
We're nerds.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so we'll have you back on again.
Perfect podcast.
And do it again.
Yeah, this is a thing. Yeah.
But thanks for coming on. And Jonah, thanks for coming back from South by Southwest. Matt Meyer, thanks for being here.
Anytime. All
right, Nick, thanks for being over there in the corner with your Rick Dees impersonation.
Rick Dees.
Hey, Nick. Nick, could you give us a Rick Dees enjoy your burrito?
just wanted to say. Enjoy your burrito.
Hey! The disco duck himself.
Disco duck.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.